Helsinki instrumental, the acoustic guitarist, 12-string guitarist, Leo Kotke. He's going to be playing at Helsinki tonight. But right now, but you might not be there because there's another great event tomorrow night, the 40th anniversary of Time and Space Limited. So we're here with co-founders and local art heroes Claudia Bruce and Linda Mussman. And TSL, as I said, is celebrating their 40th. And I wanted to hear a little more about the 40 fabulous years that that we've had, and a little about the celebration. And we're just going to make sure the microphones are working. I think the headphones are a little, so we're just going to have
troubled.
To trust okay. in the...
Right, I don't know if my mic is working or not.
Yeah, I am getting you.
Okay, because I can't hear anything. Maybe I should take these off.
Yeah, that might... Yeah, I think they're not... So there's a little bit
it's
of
actually not really. We don't really know when 40 years is. It's sometime
it's this
around.
Year.
It's around this time, this year.
It is this year.
Because
the date
Linda,
is.
Yeah.
I can't remember the date exactly,
well,
but it was somewhere in.
You know,
in 1973, when lots of great things were happening, like the Vietnam War had ended, Roe v. Wade had passed, and TSL was born.
Yeah, Linda
Good
thought
year.
Up
boom.
Yeah, Linda thought up Time and Space Limited in New York City. She was looking for time and space because she never had enough of it, and she was in different places. You were at Theater East. Where was that? Theater East.
Well, the first show I did was at Theater East on Upper East Side, and then I wandered around, did things in
you went 22
on
years.
Avenue A and 7th Street, which was quite desperate that in those days hardly anyone was down there, and the drug dealers and me were there hanging out on 7th and A, and it was the third floor in a place there where I did some performances, and we did other places. I ended up on Bond Street in a storefront and started TSL there and named it Time and Space Limited. At that time I worked for the City of New York. I was involved with helping kids get hired for the summers and year-round. And so by day I was a city worker, and by evening I was a producer of plays and writer and thinker and rehearsed, had my own loft on 17th Street and created a theater company.
All right, well, doing
that
all.
Was before Claudia. Claudia I met in 1976.
Yeah, we both came to the city, though, in 1969, not knowing that our trajectory was going to intersect in 1976 at the Universalist Church on the Upper West Side. And when Linda was doing an adaptation of a Gertrude Stein play called The Making of Americans, which she made work as a theater piece.
Well, this was 1976. We were celebrating the 200th birthday of America.
That's
so we
right.
thought it was fitting that I bring Gertrude Stein out there and her great novel, The Making of Americans, which rarely anyone reads. But I did do a few chapters. The Martha Herzland chapter was one that we studied. And
loving repeating is one way of being. That's the beginning.
And she decided she would write about every American who ever was or would be or would...
Or is. Yeah.
And when she saw that she could do it, she then stopped writing. But she did write about, I think, 1,200 pages.
I was going to say, it took her about 1,200 pages.
But
yeah,
then she
that.
Came to the realization, oh, I could do this, then I won't finish.
Right, and you didn't produce all 1,200.
I did not produce
it. It was only about an hour.
Well, once you realized that you could produce the whole thing,
exactly.
Took a cue.
And then I was, at the time, I was working at the women's newspaper, which was called The Majority Report. Mm. And my job at the time was to go around and pick up on all the events that women were involved with. And so I was sent up to the Universalist Church to check out this Gertrude Stein's The Making of Americans, and this director, Linda Mussman. And there it was. And there it is. And there it will be.
And here we are.
And then once I met Claudia in 1976, we continued to work together. Mm-hmm. And I moved out of the Universalist Church. It had a space that I worked in, and eventually I went back downtown. I moved into a new loft on 22nd Street, and in that building was a storefront on the first floor, which I rented from the people that owned it. Nobody was in there, and I said, oh, I think I'd really like to have that. And I never really could figure out how I was going to pay for it, but I went ahead and did it, and somehow I kept paying the rent, and we started to have our theater in there.
It was a shoebox theater. It was about 20 by 70, maybe?
No,
20
it was a little
by
longer,
70,
about 100.
Maybe. Was it 100?
Yeah, and there was a bathroom was right in the front in the middle. It was totally inconvenient.
it was just a little box, yeah, and it had just a... Just, you know, the toilet in there. In the
Yeah, there were some great nights. And, so if you had to use the restroom. I had to go to the bathroom right in the middle of the show. That was, there was no stopping people. Oh, there was also a sink in the back, which was part of the old plumbing. And
if you open the back door to that storefront, you kind of, there was a parking lot behind it that was, and 23rd Street was the next street over, so you could open it and get sound effects from 23rd Street if so desired, which happened in several plays.
Oh,
but it
awesome.
Was a wonderful place to work in because it was deep, and it was because we were always working in black and white. The walls were either painted white or black, and on occasion when we were doing our really radical first work, Linda would write the scripts on the walls because they were really very difficult to memorize because there was no there were no like people in them. There were no like characters that you would recognize. There were more like
lists of
things.
Lists.
And so she would, there would be these beautiful diagrams all over the walls in this, you know, written, it was like a chalkboard. Then we would finish with that and we'd paint it all white. And then we figured by the time we left that space, it was more like 18 feet because of the layers of paint that were inside that place. It was a great place, though. It had an accordion gate out front. We had a white cat in there at one point who used to love to come up from the basement. We renovated the basement at one point and lived down there for a while. I mean, we dug out. That was another show totally. But we had a white cat down there.
Miss Moon.
Yeah, Miss Moon was her name. And we had these long white tube socks. And it must have been, were they for a show or something? Anyway, there was like three pair. And at night, sometimes when we were doing our show, she would drag them up one at a time and bring them out on stage and very carefully, you know, place them
on cue.
And then she would stand in the light because she was this beautiful white cat and she would just glow. So we learned how to sort of
work with that collaborator.
Work with all kinds of, you know.
Miss Moon was part of the show. That was the deal.
Yeah,
oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
She couldn't live with us unless she maintained the storefront, which she did very well.
But we did, you know, since I started working with Linda, and of course before that, Linda was very prolific, but we've done 2 to 3 new pieces by Linda every year since then.
Mm.
And I think one of our latest was Frame Upon Frame, which we did at
God's Woods.
In God's
chapter
Woods.
One.
Chapter one, God's Woods. And it was, it's always Linda's writing, and sometimes we integrate music, and sometimes it's, this time we got to do some more movement because I was one of the main movers, like dance movement.
Right.
We were never reviewed by theater critics because it was very abstract. But if you listen to it over and over, you could get the abstractions would kind of go away, and you would get this story of what Linda was talking about, which was usually had something to do with what was going on in the world and how it fit into her consciousness. Very interesting person, this Linda Musman, I must say. I'm quite fond of her, actually.
So how did you expand your mediums from just that theater to every kind of medium which TSL now offers? You know,
I should mention that Jack Ross Pilkington has joined us on the show, and
yes.
we're hearing his voice today.
So. We came to Hudson.
Yes.
So that's how you expanded.
We came to Hudson and we found this wonderful warehouse.
Well, I think Claudia's right. Once we purchased a building which was so vast compared to a small storefront, the TSL space really dictated some of the expansion of what we would offer. I mean, a lot of films, the screen became a big part of what we did. We originally, when we, I went out and got a 16 millimeter projector. And that was in the early 90s, and 16 millimeter was still pretty available. Mm. Now it's done.
Yeah.
And then I bought a second projector, and we started projecting movies, a lot of the art house classics that we fell in love with when we were in New York. Bergman and Fellini, and
we went through all the, you know,
we
the
did
nationalities.
Them all.
But it was also a chance for us to open the. We were there, and we were standing there one day, and Linda looked at me, and she said, "You know, look at the Hudson. Look at this how this array of people in Hudson, and you know, I think that this is our next theater piece is to engage this community right. in what we do, and so the movies were the way to reach out. But the great part of that was little by little, just when we got into the space, it was a mess. Mm. It was just, you know, there were, how many, we replaced like...
Hundreds of windows were broken.
400 or 500 right. window panes, you know, that were just broken. We cleaned up the debris. There was no heat and no air conditioning. And so we just started in one spot. We had a little office that Linda made. It was actually a little house, built like a little house. Mac SE, my little computer, and that's, I would do that. And then little by little, we started renovating the building, and we kept doing theater pieces. When we first came to Hudson, we did theater pieces all over.
Well, the first thing we did in the community was Macbeth, which I had written for Claudia. I rewrote it and made it into a one-woman show. As Macbeth is seen through the eyes of Lady Macbeth. And that was at the time of the, at that time we were bombing Baghdad. That was part of the rationale around why go revisit that classic. And this hunger for power, and also the feminist movement in the 90s was sort of boring. Nobody really wanted to, oh, wow, that's over. We don't want to really, 1990, 91, that was sort of really not very interesting. So I wanted to reinvigorate that idea, and sort of the powerful Lady Macbeth was a great vehicle and offered some opportunity to also talk about the bombing of Baghdad and war and power and the lust for that. And
we did that at the middle school, and we also did it in private homes, and then we took it different places.
Do you think that Shakespeare's work has the capacity to connect to those drives such as power, you know, that are so current in today's events, you know?
Well, Shakespeare's a pretty, he's somebody that I think lives in a contemporary world that we live in. I've also did a Hamlet, and I did some work on King Lear with just the female parts, the girls and the king. I think he speaks so well about power and the process of how people think. And I've done a lot with young people in Shakespeare. They love the language. And I remember seeing Peter Brook's Midsummer Night's Dream in New York City. It was 1972. And I must say, I wrote the guy a letter. I said, I'll follow you anywhere. The man was like, it was astounding what a life-changing experience that was. There were a few times that my life changed in the theater. One was when I saw the Kabuki Theater. Mm-hmm. Peter Brook was one. And there were...
Harold Pinter was another one.
Yeah. I was just fresh in college. Went to New York, sort of a comedy. My parents went there to go to a Lutheran convention. I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to go along. I said, well, they looked at me and go like, really? I said, oh, yeah, I want to go to the convention. And while they were at the convention, I went to the theater and I saw Harold Pinter's
Homecoming.
The Homecoming. Yeah. And I must say, I never, ever, I mean, that's it. I got to be in the theater. That was extraordinary. Of course, then things like Pinter never hit Broadway again.
And then, of course, New York was the place to be. Yeah. So if you were, you know, wanted to be in theater or have anything to do with it, you just knew you had to get there. That's what happened to me. I knew I had to get there somewhere or other.
And now Hudson's the place to be.
And now Hudson is the place to be. I mean, every day Hudson astounds me, you know, what's going on, what's happening, the next movement coming in. You know, and we're still here after 23 years.
Well, that's a question I have is you know, that has just being here, I mean, that has the vision and direction changed just by being here, by the community, just in the way that you as individuals relate to one another and to the organization?
Seems to me like it's just kind of an organic growth. We just, it's just the way our lives have been. Linda and I just somehow managed to tap into, you know, where we are and to respond and try to make things better. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, we had great opportunities. And we knew that when we were in New York and we had a company of people and we trained and we worked and we just did theater. And we'd rehearse in the day and we'd perform at night. And we kind of knew that was training because we don't have that time now. Mm-hmm. So That's loaded. We got that loaded in. And when we work with other people now who don't know the specifics of, you know, technique that we used and voice and movement and all that stuff, we still have a shorthand because of that, where we can go to them and pull out of them, you know, this way of working that is the way we like to work. We just did a little show. What was that? Avoidance and Peculiar. Wasn't it 1980? What was that?
Yeah, we redid the Avoidance of Peculiar, which was a piece we did in 83. We put it in the gallery, and then we've been performing in the gallery in the small space in the back of TSL.
It's in there right now. Yeah,
yeah. I think one of the most important things that happened to me was in 1968, I went to Chicago and worked in the Hull House Theater, which was Jane Addams' settlement house. And it always haunted me that this was Jane Addams' place. And I'm like, who's Jane Addams? And it really took a long time to understand the value of Jane Addams and the settlement house experience in America, which was a 19th century phenomena where people who had wealth and knowledge, like Jane Addams, went into communities, poor communities in Chicago, and created space for education, reaching out to people who had little.
And arts and all kinds of things.
Well, and then it morphed into the arts. Then the arts became the place where Jane Addams Hull House was home. And in New York City, the Henry Street Settlement House is also a place where performance and art happen. So I think the interesting thing for me was that it is not just about art only. It's about the opportunity to reach out into communities and be life-changing forces, as the theater has been for Claudia and I. I mean, I came from Indiana, and Claudia came from Georgia. We were not, you know, we weren't on this track to be rich, famous, or make a lot of money. Our interest was really, we were driven by the love and passion of art and what it had done for us. And I think that all together, being in Hudson is a great way to practice all those things that we've been preparing for our whole life.
Well, TSL has been such an amazing contributor to Hudson. And are you thinking about the next 40 years and what you need or hope for?
We have been thinking about the next 40 years. So, you know, when I'm, 107?
You're celebrating
we'll
again.
We'll be celebrating again, yeah.
Well, time's tricky. It's an elusive. It's hard to hold on to. I think the moment is always really, being in that moment and trying to seize it is really not to cop out on the answer, but it is really to not panic, not worry. Where's TSL going to be? But there is a question, you know, where is it going to be? And who's going to sustain this idea? And it's not just our legacy. It's the legacy of the arts and culture in places. You know, when you can download anything you want off of Netflix and you don't really need to go to a public space and watch a movie, you can do everything in your own zone, in your own little room. What is the reason to come out of that room, sit in a room and share a movie, a theater piece, some music? It really is the engagement of the public. And the theater, believe me, I've seen much of my work on video. I can't stand it. It is about experiencing it only live. It's the only way you can really understand what we do. Mm-hmm. And that theater is the last stop.
And it's there and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Right, and that's one of the things about it. Right?
And that's the best part. It is really nothing you can capture on any media that I've seen.
And you let it go.
Right. Yeah.
So it's perfect.
So 40 years, maybe we'll just let it go and move on to 41 and 42 and 43.
Well, it's great. It's great that you took time out. I know you have a lot going on, getting ready
for... Well, we got to get our party dress on.
Exactly, right.
And our party hats.
Oh, I know, and my party shoes.
And that's
party
tomorrow
shoes.
Night
at tomorrow
6:30 at TSL and on Columbia Street.
Oh, just down the road from your place.
434 Columbia Street.
434 Columbia. And for those of you who don't know
on
where
the north side of the truck route where really it's happening.
Right, that's right.
Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, no, it's been great. And good luck, and we look forward to seeing you around and tomorrow night.
Okay.